Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And when the history is written of those who got it right about the toxic housing market, or at least saw some of this coming, a certain corner of the public radio universe will be included on the list. Maybe you already know about the now famous episode of This American Life that aired back in May called The Giant Pool of Money, featuring NPR international business correspondent Adam Davidson and This American Life producer Alex Blumberg. They've since done a big follow-up piece for This American Life called Another Frightening Show About the Economy. And Adam maintains a great resource for understanding the financial crisis. Adam and Alex do the blog called Planet Money. We will rocket up to Planet Money and talk to Alex and Adam. We'll hear a couple of clips from their original. Did I leave out the year?
The year that we did this?
Yes.
Yeah, it was this year.
It was this year.
Early in May.
It was May.
So for those of you, podcast too, by the way.
And so you can sign up for the Planet Money podcast at npr.org. And for those of you who missed it, here is just the very beginning of the original Giant Pool of Money piece. You will recognize the host, even though he was hoarse on that day, Ira Glass.
So, Adam, where are we?
I recorded this at the Ritz-Carlton in Lower Manhattan. It's a black tie dinner. It was just a few weeks ago.
And you, by the way, are NPR's international business and economics correspondent.
That's right. I was there for my job. They're giving out awards for all these financial securities, including the one that nearly brought down the global financial system, you know, in the whole subprime mortgage crisis.
At this time, I'd like to ask all of our stars to please assemble over here on the left side of the stage.
This guy is a legend. He's a granddaddy of our industry.
I'm sitting at this dinner with Jim Finkel. He's kind of nervous because he's up for CDO of the year for the CDO he created, Monterey. Now, the CDO, that's what we're talking about. That's the financial instrument that was central to this global credit crisis we're in.
All right. So with me now, NPR international economics correspondent and Planet Money blogger, Adam Davidson and Alex Blumberg, This American Life producer and Planet Money blogger. And Adam, first of all, thanks for all you've done with us already since September 15th to explain the credit default swaps and all this other stuff that's been so new to many of us. And Alex, that was an unbelievable segment because here they were giving an award to this guy as recently as this May for creating this kind of subprime instrument that's bringing down the global economy.
Yeah, I know. It was, I mean, to be fair, and Adam pointed this out, they were a little sheepish about it. And I mean, you were there. What was the mood in
the mood room? Was very subdued. It wasn't woohoo, we conquered the world. It was more, what struck me, and Alex, I think, struck you, is how it is hard to find villains. You go to a room like that, you go to a room of a black tie party of people who created subprime mortgage-related toxic assets, and you think this will be a room full of villains. These are all people who got rich off of this crisis. And I'm not saying I liked everyone, but a lot of broadcast outlets do, which is, oh, let's find the villains and let's find the victims. And I think for us it was sort of a combination that sort of everyone is a victim, everyone is a villain.
And here's one of the victim stories that follows on from that first part of that show. All these new terms that are now in the general vocabulary, by the way, like CDOs and credit default swaps and the interbank loan rate index known as LIBOR and the other interbank loan rate index known as the TED spread. But you, Alex, first got interested in this through something called a NINA. That's
right.
Not Nina Totenberg.
No.
But it's NINA and a U.S. Marine from Brooklyn.
Yes. Well, the NINA stands for No Income, No Asset. And that was a type of mortgage that was written during the boom times here.
And I just want to note it. Sometimes it's called a ninja for no income, no job, no asset.
Yes.
Which sounds more like a slur than a basis on which to lend somebody money.
Well, and that was the thing that I think that drew me and Adam to this story in the first place was just that in the coverage, it was sort of, you know, who's to blame for this? Who's the problem? You know, who are the victims? And the this was never defined. And to me, the this was, why was a bank ever writing a mortgage that was no income, no asset? That just doesn't make any sense. And so that was sort of That was one of the reasons that we set out on this.
And
to try
I
to figure
still
this out.
Can't claim to really understand that, Adam. Why did the banks think that it was a good idea to lend people money who had no job, no income, no assets?
Well, I want to set the scene back. Was it 2005?
You first got
in touch with me. So I'm international business and economics correspondent for NPR in 2005. I'm apparently very impressed with my knowledge and understanding of the world economy. And my friend,
as was I,
and my friend Alex,
you were impressed with his knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. Not my knowledge. I've never been impressed with my own knowledge.
Alex, what was your major in college?
My major was political science with a minor in Russian.
Enough said.
Yeah.
Okay. So Alex emails me, or it was a first email or a call. And, you know, what about these no income, no asset loans? And I said, well, what you don't understand is it's part of a global phenomenon. There's this risk is cheaper now. There's too much cash looking for places to invest. There's a total transformation of the global economy. So it actually, from that global macro view, it makes total sense
And I was like, yeah. But I've been reading all these things on the internet, and it seems like there's going to be a global meltdown, you know, which obviously I was already, you know,
figured this out in 2005.
Well, I didn't figure it out. People on the internet figured it out, who I happened to read. But I knew that it's always dangerous to get all your sources exclusively from people on the internet.
And the first phase of we've been friends for a long time, but the first phase of this particular aspect of our relationship was me explaining to Alex why he's wrong and there isn't going to be any systemic crisis coming. And it was Alex who kept pushing me in my reporting long before I think you had any plans of covering this. He just kept asking me. I had these big macro visions of how things worked, but he'd say, well, who's the guy at the investment bank who puts it together? Who's the guy who set this up? And it constantly forced me to think not in terms of these big macro abstractions, but how these instruments are created, how they're built, which eventually, once I was allowed myself to realize I didn't know nearly as much as I thought I did, allowed us to see through the mess.
And it wasn't just you. I mean, one question that I haven't really heard asked is, where were the credit rating agencies like Moody's and Standard and Poor's? So, you know, if people realized on the internet, whatever that means, that these loans were a little like junk bonds, you would think, well, that's the job of the credit rating agencies, is to kind of give a little reality check to the banks.
Right. I mean, the credit rating agencies, I think the main problem with the credit rating agencies, and this is what people again on the internet and other places have written about this a lot, is that their business model is a little bit, there's an inherent conflict of interest in that they are paid to rate instruments that are created by Wall Street banks, but the people who pay them are those same Wall Street banks. And so, you know, just creates this sort of incentive for them to give the banks what they want, because there's three credit rating agencies, there's three big ones, and if the bank doesn't like a rating that one of them gives, it'll just go to another one. So there's all this sort of built-in conflict of
interest. And there's also, I think, what we talked about is this over-reliance on data. They had these incredibly expensive, complicated computer systems modeling the likelihood of a crisis, and all the models were telling them, it's fine,
Wait,
it's fine.
Wait, the computers got it wrong, too? This wasn't just psychological exuberance?
Well, what we finally figured out is that the computers had the wrong data, that there's a massive shift in 2003, 2004, 2005. New people were getting mortgage loans that had never in the history of America qualified for mortgage loans, and all the data was based on normal practice. But that's like, you know, saying your data is based on healthy people, and suddenly you're putting, you know, you're counting a bunch of people with terminal cancer, and but you haven't updated your data. The data was wrong. Mm-hmm. I guess the computers were right.
So, Alex, if the bankers didn't understand the economy, and the CEO of Lehman Brothers, Richard Fuld, didn't understand, he was bankrupting his company, and Alan Greenspan didn't understand, God himself, that he was bankrupting his country, and thought it was all a good idea, and only guys like you, Alex Bloomberg, curious producer for a quirky, offbeat, non-economy show like This American Life, thought to ask the question, how can we trust the big economics wise men like Henry Paulson and Robert Rubin and anyone else to get us out of this?
Well, you can't, and that's why I came on your show today, Brian, because I'm taking this moment to announce that I'm officially opening my bid to become the next Secretary of the Treasury, whoever wins.
Wow, I didn't know you were going to do that. Congratulations.
No, I have no... I think it's – I mean, clearly it's just much more complicated than – it's very easy sitting outside to look and just sort of, you know, run a couple of curious questions.
Right.
And I think it's I think it's just easier from the outside to sort of look in. I've had people tell me this, that, you know, these bankers that we talk to, and they say, you know, when you're inside it and things have been changing incrementally, but you've been every day you come in and you don't notice the change. And me, I had, you know, I've never had a mortgage. I've never owned my own property. And the last thing I heard about mortgages was that, you know, you needed to put 20% down and you needed to, you know.
You were living on a This American Life producer's rental income.
In New York City. So, you know, there was no chance. And so the last thing I'd heard was, you know, I had like 10-year-old data in my head about, like, this is what it takes to get a mortgage. You need to put a whole bunch of money down. The interest rates are really high. And then I found out about this and it just seemed strange.
All right. Hold the thought, because we're going to continue in a minute. And then I want to ask you about some of the blog posts that you have up there in the last couple of days, and also these two big numbers that are sloshing around out there that I think you can actually explain to us, Adam. One of them is $62 trillion, and the other one, which was in your original piece, is $70 trillion, and why that actually means something to us down here in the regular people's economy. All right, so stay with us for more with Adam Davidson, international economics correspondent for NPR, and Alex Blumberg, This American Life producer, and they now both blog together at Planet Money. Does it have its own
URL? npr.org/money, and blog and podcast, npr.org/money.
All right, and we'll continue with them in a minute. So we continue now with Adam Davidson and Alex Blumberg, the creators of NPR's Planet Money blog, which grew out of, Adam's reporting as NPR international economics correspondent, and B, the This American Life giant pool of money show with Alex Blumberg, This American Life producer, that has made such a splash. And Adam, in the global pool of money, you actually had a number for the total amount of savings or investments in the world, if I understood it right. And that number is $70 trillion. And that, you know, that number as of pretty recently was twice what it had been just a decade ago, you told us. Now, just hearing the number 70 trillion is enough to make people's eyes glaze over. So what does that number actually mean to you and me?
Well, and that number is lower now. There's just less money in the world, which is a confusing idea for people. But there is. There's less money now by a lot. It is hard. These massive numbers, a million, a billion, a trillion, who knows what they're worth. But a trillion is real serious money. Every dollar spent on any service or product in the United States in a year is about $13 trillion. That's, just doing the math in my head, a little less than a quarter of the world, which is more like $50 trillion. So every dollar spent everywhere is $50
trillion. And that's everybody who's spending anything. That's like, from like a businessman in Japan to like a farmer in Africa to anybody spending anything. Everything that Boeing spends, everything that anybody spends, right?
Everything like, Bill Gates spends, it's $50 trillion. And then for a variety of reasons, the world got very weird in the last decade, and a lot of money started pooling up in oil-rich countries in the Gulf, in China, and other East Asian fast-growing economies. And suddenly there were these massive pools of money growing in places that never existed before, looking for a place to invest. And for a variety of complicated reasons, that ended up being above anything else, the U.S. subprime housing industry. And so you basically had this funnel of dough pouring into the U.S. economy from all over the world to pump up this housing industry. And now, obviously, that funnel has burst.
So let me ask you what I've been calling the $62 trillion question when I ask other people. I keep hearing this other mind-numbing figure, $62 trillion as the old value of all these credit default swaps that no one knows what they're worth anymore. If that's true, mm-hmm. that would be the vast majority of the total money in the world having been invested into these perverted instruments.
Well, I mean, again, this is one of these things where, like, you talk to certain people and certain people are very, very, it's a very scary number, and then other people are like, well, that's just the notional amount. And and it, you don't have to worry about it that much at all. I think so that the answer is, yeah, the answer is somewhere in between. What they mean when they say notional amount, basically what a credit default swap is like it's sort of like an insurance contract. So I have a bond, and it's worth $1 billion, my bond, and I want somebody, and then I start to worry that it's going to go bad, that I'm not going to get paid back. So I say to, I make an agreement with somebody to, if I'm going to pay you a certain percentage a year, you will pay me back if that bond goes bad. So I'll pay you $20 million a year, you know, for 5 years. And then if the bond goes back, you'll pay me $1 billion. And then I'm safe. Now, that is, you know, $1 billion bet, basically. So that's $1 billion of this $62 trillion number. Now, what they did is, if I'm the person giving you protection, if I'm the person who says, sure, I'll pay you $1 billion, I then go and I say to somebody else, I make the same agreement with somebody else. So I'm paying you $1 billion, and then I'll go to Adam and I'll say, hey, if this bond goes bad, will you pay me $1 billion? So I'm paying you, but Adam is paying me, so my position is netted. And so that's basically what people...
So let's see. Do we count that as $1 billion or $2 billion?
Or zero.
Or zero because it cancels it out, or $20 million because that's the amount of money that actually traded hands.
So that's the problem.
That's why it's a notional amount of money.
$62 trillion counts that as $2 billion, but some people would count it as $0 since they balance each other out.
How about if I pay your landlord about $2 million notional dollars for the building you're living in?
Right.
All right. So you did this follow-up show that just aired, another frightening show about the economy, aptly titled On This American Life. And here's a clip with Adam explaining an unexpected turn in the final version of the Paulson bailout plan. It seems the banks and all their lobbyists liked the original version that didn't give the government any ownership of the banks, as opposed to the new version, the stock injection plan, which sounds so much like a visit to the doctor, doesn't it? A stock injection plan where taxpayers would actually have part ownership of the banks.
Well, that's what's interesting. Until last night, Thursday, I and everyone all the experts I talked to, all the people on Capitol Hill, were under the impression the stock injection plan was simply not on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You and I worked late last night. I was in in a cab on the way home. I got a call from a guy I know who's pretty well connected right around midnight. And he told me, guess what? The stock injection plan is in the Senate bill that was passed, and it's in the House bill. I woke up this morning, and I still could barely believe it. I've been calling around. It was kind of a dramatic morning. The first few people I called said, no, that's ridiculous. There's no way that could have gotten in. That's impossible. Over the course of the morning, I got more and more confirmation. And basically what happened is someone, and we still don't know who, put in very subtle language into the Senate bill that gives this as an option to the Treasury Secretary.
Alex, you ever figure out who inserted that
language? No, we never figured it out. But the one thing I would say is that I think that might have been the only time in history that This American Life has actually broken anything that could be described as breaking news.
Yeah. And it was the big story of the week.
Yeah,
and
it was very exciting. Yeah. We couldn't have done it without Adam Davidson. Yeah.
And why didn't they want that in there? Or how did it get in there?
Well, actually, if Chuck Schumer's listening, I'd love a phone call from him or any of his staff. He's one of the suspects, in a good way, for the person who might have squeezed this in to the bill. But, you know, the banks, it's pretty straightforward. This is what I said to Ira on the show. If I came to you, Brian, and said, here's $1,000, let me take all the junk in your basement, all these toxic assets off your hands, and you get to keep $1,000 and then go on your merry way, you're going to like that option. The stock injection plan is, let me give you $1,000, and now I'm a co-owner of your house. I might be able to kick you out of the house. I might be able to take over and remodel. You're not going to like that plan. But of course, we're not bank executives. We're the taxpayer. So we want the one that benefits taxpayers more, but we as citizens are not as powerful a lobbyist as the banking lobby. So
here we are.
It ended up Congress seems to have done the right thing. Yeah.
Let me ask you about one of the posts on your blog from the other day. And again, I'm just trying to ask questions that are big things that confuse me, that confuse a lot of our listeners. It's called What's Taking So Long? And I mentioned before the TED spread, which is a measure of how credit is flowing. And you noted on Friday in the Planet Money blog that the TED spread is dropping, which is a good thing. But the financial world still seems to have the flu, despite the trillions of dollars of bank bailouts now by the U.S. and European governments and the taking of equity in those banks, as you were just describing. So as you titled your blog post, what's taking so long?
So right now, today, where are we in this crisis? And we're in a very specific place. What the hope is, and this is a lot of people think where we are now, is the problems have been fundamentally fixed. The crisis problems, the complete freezing of the movement of money from bank to bank and throughout the financial system, that those problems have now finally, that the $700 billion bailout at first did not do it. The variety of Fed actions didn't do it. But finally, all the stuff that happened last week did it. And everyone just basically, it's a bunch of bankers have lawyers reading over all the things that have happened and are trying to figure it out. And today will be the day, or tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday will be the day that finally everyone says, all right, I think it's fixed. That's the hope. We don't know, though, because we're in a world that no one has ever seen in the global economy. No one has ever predicted. We are like in the black hole where the laws of physics no longer apply and nobody knows really what's going on.
So I know you guys got to go in a minute, but in terms of where we're going, Alex, if global wealth today has dropped back to what it was in like 1998?
Not that far. No. Yeah, what,
2003.
So
yeah.
2003 wasn't so bad.
No.
Or it's not going to be 1933, or is that the wrong way to look at it?
No, I think that's probably the right way to look at it. Like, I don't think it's going to be 1933. There's so many things that are different now than was the case in 1933. For one thing, we're just a much wealthier nation. People have much more mobility. Like, you lost your job in 1933. You couldn't get it was so hard to get another job. So now that's automatically there. There's all these, yeah.
I know you have to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. If you want to add 15 seconds to that, then I'm going to get you out the door so you're not late.
It's also a feeling of movement. When you're in a car going from 40 to 50, it feels good. When you're in a car going from 50 to 40, and especially if it's abrupt and sudden, it feels really painful. So 40 miles an hour might be the same miles an hour, but it's the acceleration and deceleration. And we're in a massive deceleration.
All right. I hope you'll keep coming in and explaining this stuff to it.
Love the Brian Lehrer Show. We've been thrilled to come on. Yes.
Thank you. And you make it so clear. Alex Blumberg and Adam Davidson from npr.org/money. We also put a link right on our show page if you want to sign up for their podcast through us. You can do that at wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.